The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
We are so glad you're with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We are ready to recap the BCS title game from Monday night after the Crimson Tide. Boy, they just annihilated LSU. A complete shutout. The first time in the 14-year history of the BCS. And I am just so curious to have Jason Peter on our program because I want to know what his thoughts are. He has not only played in national championship games, but he won three of them during his time at Nebraska. He was an All-American and, of course, went on and took his talents to the next level to the NFL with the Carolina Panthers. Hello, Jason. It's great to have you back with us this weekend.
Thanks for having me, Elissa. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. And like I said, a lot of curiosity. Did you anticipate that the Alabama Crimson Tide, that they would completely run all over LSU? I know you loved that defensive performance.
Yeah. I thought that Alabama would win the game. People just on Twitter or on the radio were asking, that question between Les Miles and Nick Saban. And I said, it's hard to bet against Saban when he's had that much time to prepare for a football game, and especially since they've already lost to that team earlier in the season. So there might have been a chip on Alabama's shoulders, but what a performance. I mean, it really was. They really made LSU look bad. And that, you're talking about the team that ran the table for the entire regular season. They made LSU look like a middle-of-the-road type team, especially on offense. Now, I tip my hat to LSU's defense. They hung in there really as long
True.
As they
yes.
could. Not long enough, but as long as I think they were able to. They just didn't get any help at all from the offensive side. And it's hard to win a football game, especially a game of that magnitude, when you don't have both sides clicking. Actually, all three phases, the special teams as well, really needs to be clicking.
Well, it certainly wasn't an offensive game, as you're talking about. But thankfully for Alabama, they did get, five field goals from Jeremy Shelley. Then, of course, as you had talked about, the defense just completely kept the Tigers off the scoreboard.
Yeah, and he also had one blocked early on, and he missed one as well. So, I thought it was similar to the first game. I thought Alabama probably in the first game should have won that game as well. I think they had more opportunities, but LSU made plays, to keep them out of the end zone. I think a big thing, and they talked about it, throughout the game was the energy level on the LSU sidelines. It was horrible.
Right.
And, it's interesting because throughout media week, and I forget who it was exactly, one of the journalists that covers the SEC had sent out a tweet talking about how LSU players said that Tyrann Mathieu is their leader. And when I read that, I thought, wow. A true sophomore as a leader of a defense. And I thought, that's pushing it, I think. For a team that plays as well as LSU, you'd think that there would be some senior-type leadership. But then when I saw the way that LSU was conducting themselves on the sidelines, I said, you know what? That's probably right. Because look at this. The way that those players are acting, that looks like they have no leadership on that team. And sure enough, if you have a sophomore, that he's your guy that seniors and juniors and everybody else looks to, he doesn't know how to react in that situation. He's just a young kid. He's finally coming into his own, and he's a heck of a football player. But there's something to be said about when your back's against the wall and you're backed into a corner, how are you going to come out swinging? And young kids, or, not young, but freshmen or sophomores, they usually don't know how to react. They don't know the things to say on the sidelines. They don't know that the morale is just as important as making plays out there on the field. So it did really make sense to me that, you know, he probably is their leader, and that in part is probably why they look so dejected on the sidelines. But I thought that was a big problem for LSU and trying to get back into that game.
I wanted you to weigh in because there was a big debate, you know, Les Miles, head coach, not giving Jarrett Lee a try and just, you know, continue to go with Jordan Jefferson.
Well, the guy who could probably give you that best take is Bobby Hebert.
Uh-oh.
The former Saints quarterback who has a son that plays for LSU.
What was he thinking, line. Jason?
Yeah, he kind of really gave Les Miles an earful in that post-game presser. But it was a little shocking that Jarrett Lee, the guy who went, I think, 9-0, 10-0, something like that as a starter for LSU when Jordan Jefferson was suspended. I found it odd that he didn't give him at least a series. And I think they were always thinking, well, the guy who has the most big play capability is Jordan Jefferson. So why would we keep him on the bench? I mean, what's Jarrett Lee, you know, does he have that capability of running the football and picking up first downs? And probably not, but sometimes you just got to give somebody else a shot. And sometimes you just got to say, maybe he'll give us a spark, because obviously nothing was happening with Jordan Jefferson. And then at some point, you know, in the second half, it became that not only was he not making plays, but he was making bad plays now. And you know, the one interception where he basically shovel passed it to the Alabama linebacker, I mean, I don't know what he was thinking there. It was just one of those things, like he's running with the ball, and oh my, I got to get rid of it, like hot potato, and he throws it to the Alabama linebacker. And I'll tell you, talking about that play, though, the linebacker that went down, you know, he's a young kid, and I saw the injury, and it reminded me of the 96 Fiesta Bowl when we played Florida, and Ike Hilliard had his hip popped out or was just dislocated, and you could hear Ike Hilliard screaming from the sidelines because he was in so much pain.
Wow.
And when I saw this happen to the Alabama linebacker, really my heart went out. It looked like it was a hip. I'm not sure if they ended up saying it was later maybe a knee or an ankle, but that really looked like a bad injury. And I was really praying that the kid was going to be all right, because he's a good football player as well, and part of the stable of players that Nick Saban has brought to Tuscaloosa.
Well, Nick Saban certainly has done an amazing job, celebrates his second national championship and title in 3 years. What does it say about him as far as his coaching legacy, and I wonder how much longer that he will continue to coach? I mean, he looks pretty dialed in and focused.
I don't think he's going to go anywhere. I think he's content being down there at Alabama. I think he's also the type of guy that would like to stand atop the list of coaches with the most championships. And he tied my coach with this victory, Tom Osborne, at 3 national championships. And, you know, I think he's a guy that kids look at, and when he's sitting in their living room, I don't think there's any BS. There's no nonsense. You know, he wants the best of the best, and kids know the type of coach that he is. He demands a lot. He's energetic. He's lively. He's a get-in-your-face type coach. And kids say, that's okay, because I know that he's going to give me the best opportunity to go to the NFL, and at the same time, he's going to give me the best opportunity to win national championships while I'm at college. And I think that's, you know, the ultimate combination right there. I don't know if there's too many coaches that give you that opportunity. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Urban Meyer at Ohio State. I think he had that somewhat down at Florida, where guys said, you know, he can get me to the NFL as well as compete for national championships. You know, we talk about it up here at Nebraska and kind of, you know, the mentality of Bo Pelini on the sidelines and the way that he's very explosive on the sidelines and the way that he communicates, if you want to use that word, with the referees. I said, you know, you can't act like that unless you've got some championships, I think, to back it up. At some point, people are going to just be tired of it. I think it's the same thing that happened with Rex Ryan up in New York, or is happening with Rex Ryan up in New York. People are tired of hearing about how you're the best team in the NFL, yet you don't make the playoffs. People are tired of hearing about, you know, how good your defense is or how good this is or that, but you don't have the money to show for it. Do you know what I mean? You got to have the proof there, and proof is winning championships. That's the bottom line. You can run the table and you end up losing horribly in the national championship game, and you know what? You get a pat on the back for that. But ultimately, that's what the fans want nowadays. That's what administration wants. They want championships, and Nick Saban provides that for Alabama.
Absolutely, he does, and we talk about it's the second national title in the last three seasons, but now he's the only head coach with three BCS titles, two at Alabama, and I forgot, that's right, he won that other one in 2003 at LSU.
Yeah, he's just he's in a class all by himself, I think, at this point in terms of current head coaches. You know, I think that guy could probably pack up and head to a Big Ten school or a Pac-12 school, and I think he probably has enough in terms of respect from the football community that I think whichever team he took over, they would probably be predicted to compete for championships within a year or two of him arriving there. I think that's how much respect he has in the college football community. I think he's the guy that people look at as the guy who sets the bar. And it's hard to argue with that.
Well, and I'll tell you, too, I mean, gosh, he's loaded. I mean, you think about just defensively. I know you got to love this guy and how he played. He was the defensive MVP, Courtney Upshaw. I mean, he was absolutely terrific. And then, you know, Nick Saban, he's got a sophomore quarterback in that A.J. McCarron.
Yeah, and, you know, people really were talking about the job that McCarron's was doing and how he stepped up and did more than just... And it's a phrase that gets thrown around a lot, and I'm not necessarily one that buys into it, but the whole manages the game.
He had zero turnovers in that game, Jason.
Yeah, and that's a key in a championship-type game. You can't turn the ball over. Although I think even if Alabama did in this game, I think their defense played well enough that they could probably overcome those turnovers. I think McCarron did a great job on offense. I mean, he threw the ball a few times into some tight coverage. He found the open guy. He checked when he needed to check, and you know, he really did a great job. There were times when Chavis, the defense coordinator at LSU, tried to come after him, and he just never got rattled. He always found the hot route, and he just continued to keep a level head, and that's what you need in a game of that magnitude. Sometimes these kids, they're young, especially when you look at the rosters of LSU and Alabama, you've got a lot of young players. I mean, these are two premier schools,
yes,
that
mm-hmm.
get the best young talent in the United States. So they have the tendency of playing a lot of young kids, and sometimes those young kids, they get caught up in the show. You know, it was something that was always repeated in NFL locker rooms was, you know, don't get caught up in the show as a young player. You can't get caught up in all everything that's going on around you. You got to just focus on each and every play. And, you know, that's what LSU was not able to do, and Alabama was. But McCarron, he was, you know, you talk about the quarterback, it's the most important position on the field, especially on offense. And you know, there were some talented kids out there playing for LSU on defense, especially in that secondary. And there were times he made NFL-type throws. I mean, he was throwing across the length of the field. I mean, he was just, he was on his game. He was on his A game. And now he's raised the bar, I think, for himself. You know, people are expecting him to continue to play at that level and continue to get better. And I'm excited to see what he can do. I mean, Alabama's had some good quarterbacks under Saban, but I don't think they've had, you know, a real great one, a Joe Namath-type quarterback.
The great Jason Peter is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Our segment is being powered by our friends at Pinnacle Bank. We want to encourage you to go to their website. That is PinBankTX.com, and also go and check out our radio website. That's eradiosports.com. Jason, you've been really lighting it up on Twitter. What's gotten into you these past couple of weeks?
I don't know. It's just now that the football season's over, it was getting close to being over, and it seems to be my release from the chasing the two kids around the
house. It's cathartic.
And the screaming and the yelling, and yeah, today the hot topic that I started this morning was the Twinkie and Hostess having to file for Chapter 11, I guess.
Yes.
And, you know, fond memories of going to the local store up the road and buying a Twinkie for 25 cents or whatever they were back then.
Oh, those days are long gone. Okay, now listen, I've definitely, since we've got you on the program, a guy that's popped up and he's emerged, he's going to be right here in Dallas, Bill Callahan, and he's got a strong resume as an offensive line coach, but what can Cowboy fans expect? I know that, how many years was he up there in Lincoln, Nebraska with the Huskers before heading to the Raiders?
Well, he took over for Frank Solich in 2004, and he led Nebraska for the next four years to some of the worst years in Nebraska football history. You know, he came in and he, quote, wanted to change the culture. And I don't know why you change the culture of a national championship-type culture. But that's what he wanted to do, and Nebraska's still trying to, I think, recover somewhat from some of the stuff that he did. But, you know, I don't think that you can mix Bill Callahan, head coach at Nebraska, to Bill Callahan, offensive line coach at the Dallas Cowboys. He's one of the most respected offensive line coaches in the NFL, and I think that's probably where he needs to be. He needs to be in the NFL, coaching the offensive line, maybe like New York had as a co-offensive coordinator, where he kind of you know, focuses more on the running game, and I think that's where his expertise lies. I think when you're a head coach, you need to be authentic. And I don't know, from what he did out here at Nebraska, as a head coach, he wasn't very genuine. He wasn't very authentic, and people could see that. Players could see that. And when players see that, they don't play for you. They don't run through wall after wall after wall for you. You know, he had the year out at Oakland, but let's face it. I mean, you know, John Gruden had kind of built that dynasty or built that Raiders team out there when they had those successful years and they went to the Super Bowl. But, you know, it's still, I think, is something that gets talked about, whether or not he could be a successful head coach. And look, sometimes guys, they don't succeed in their first go-around as being a head coach. Bill Belichick, you know, it took him a couple tries before he was able to do it. And, you know, Bill Callahan still may end up being a decent head coach in the NFL somewhere, but I think in terms of what Dallas is getting down there as a offensive line coach, I think they're getting one of the best. And he's got big shoes to fill down there, absolutely. With Hudson Hawk retiring, I think people are expecting something out of it. The Dallas Cowboys they're synonymous for having great offensive line play. You know, I know when I was a player, it was the thing when we played the Cowboys, it was like, you know, Eric Williams, Larry Allen, Stepnoski.
Right.
And, I mean, that's just, you know, one half of the offensive line there. I mean, having to line up and play against that, that was brutal. I mean, those were some good football players, and people expect that sort of play out of the Dallas Cowboys offensive line.
Well, I know Cowboy fans are, you know, probably excited to hear you sound so optimistic about that he can develop some of the younger players that are going to be a part of this, you know, Cowboys organization, because they need some immediate results. We're not looking, you know, 2 or 3 years down the line. I mean, folks here are, they're upset, they're angry, and they're very disappointed on the conclusion of this season and how things turned out in the end.
Yeah, and it's hard for me to say nice things about him, knowing what he did to my beloved Huskers up here. But you know, just as someone who is in the media, I give him an honest take, and I think he is a very good offensive line coach. You know, there won't be too many opportunities, I think, for him to be the guy who journalists are requesting for the post-game interviews. Usually that lies with the head coach, maybe a coordinator every once in a while, and then, you know, the players. But I know when he was up here and the press conferences that he had, he wanted everybody to know that he was the smartest guy in the room. And, you know, it was one of those, I'd love to explain it to you, but you wouldn't understand it type deal. And that didn't fly up here for Nebraska fans. And Nebraska fans are passionate, the same way Dallas Cowboys fans are passionate. So they like to be involved. So if he takes that approach, then there'll probably be some problems that lie ahead. But, you know, if he just goes in and does his job and coaches the O-line up, I think he'll be a big positive for the Dallas Cowboys organization.
The operative word, you talk about passion. We're going to completely shift avenues. I definitely, before we get ready to close out our interview, talk to us about Tim Tebow. Just, you know, how he was able to engineer another big comeback, and he certainly has created quite a buzz in the NFL.
Yeah, he really has. I was one of the guys that said,
come on, Jason, say it.
That Denver is going to win this game against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
I thought this defense you're talking about, it's not one of the best defenses in the NFL this year. You're just talking about one of the best defenses in the NFL ever, all time. I mean, they just, year after year, Dick LeBeau has just continued to have this defense playing. I mean, and before Dick, it was, Don Capers was calling the shots there as the coordinator, and they just, you know, the names, you just reads like an all-pro list for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I thought this, they're going to get after him, and they create confusion on for opposing quarterbacks. And as a young guy, I just didn't think Tebow was going to be able to handle it. And not only did he handle it, he tore them a new one. I mean, he played about as well as any quarterback against the Steelers has played all year, maybe in the last 3-4 years. He just, you know, you got to play. You got to be on your A game when you play a defense like the Steelers. And he was on his A game. He was on his A-plus game. I mean, that was a performance that you expect out of the Aaron Rodgers, the Tom Brady's, the Drew Brees's, the guys like that. And I'm not putting Tebow in that category. He's got a lot of games to win and a lot of defenses to burn before he gets put in that category. He's got to win some championships. But I'll tell you, he's off to the right start. He really is. And, he's a good guy. And I know there's a lot of people out there that not only want him to fail, but they want him to, like, be embarrassed. And that's the part I don't get, is why people want to see him fail so drastically and want to see him walk away from the NFL with his, you know, the tail between the legs. I don't get that part of it, but I'm looking forward to this weekend's game. It's obviously a different environment from playing in Denver compared to going out to the Northeast and playing at New England. They're going to be hostile. They're going to be, you know, after every bone in Tim Tebow's body. But from everything that he's shown us thus far. I don't see why people would be completely shocked if he's able to beat the New England Patriots.
Well, you know, he's shown a lot of resolve, but I think it's kind of funny, you know, just they're having these polls that are coming out saying 43% say that Tim Tebow, he's winning. You know, it's divine intervention. That's why it's the favor of God. That's why he's coming through.
Yeah, hey, whatever works for him.
You're a good Catholic, Hail Mary, right?
Yeah, ultimately it's about winning football games, and especially in the NFL. When you're in college, you can win some games, and on Monday morning, it's, yeah, we won the game, but look who we were playing, and look at this, and look at the, you know, why that happened or this happened. You know, we should have beat this team by 40. Or in the NFL, when you win a game on Monday morning, all they're saying is, we won the game, and we're happy we won the game. Ultimately, your goal is to get to the playoffs, where this new season starts. Tim Tebow was able to get the Denver Broncos, not solely just on his play. He was part of this group effort by 53 guys for the Denver Broncos that decided we're going to get to the playoffs. Obviously, the quarterback, They get all the praise or most of the praise when things go good, too much of the praise, but they also get too much of the criticism and the blame when things don't go well. And I think you've seen that. I think 99% journalists across America were ready to throw the towel in after Denver lost their last two. So it's funny to watch now after a great performance that he had. It seems like everybody is jumping back on board, but he brings excitement. He brings I think, you know, in order to have people that are so excited about games and about certain players, I also think you have to have the guys, the naysayers as well. I mean, that's what makes life great, is people that tell you you can't, and then the people that tell you you can, and trying to overcome those sorts of things. And I think that he brings that element, or he magnifies that element at the NFL level with his play.
Well, it was such a huge win, you know, last weekend, but he really is, just as you're saying, Jason, he's that testament to perseverance. He's such an inspiring young man, and you know, everybody wants to find out and know more about him, so it will be interesting to see how it all plays out this weekend. Quickly, talk to us about Baylor. Robert Griffin III, he has made it official. He will skip his senior year. He's going to enter the NFL draft, and I think that he definitely made the right move.
Yeah, I thought this was kind of a no-brainer. What a career he's had. I think just since the time he came in as a freshman, and I remember watching him play up here in Lincoln and thinking, that kid's going to be a good football player. I didn't think he was going to win a Heisman Trophy at the time, but, you know, you just never know how kids are going to develop and how they're going to take criticism, how they're going to take praise. These are all things that go into the development of a football player. And for Baylor to have a 10-win season and to have them as the school that has the Heisman Trophy recipient, you know, it's I hate to say that there's not any more room for them to grow. Because certainly there is. I mean, they have a great coach in Art Briles, and they have some talented players at Baylor. But I think it would be difficult to duplicate that. If RG3 had come back for his senior year, I think Andrew Luck did it, and I like the decision by a lot of these guys, not just to pack up and leave and take the first check that's written. I think they'll realize that college is the time of their lives. When you get to play football and it's fun, and you know, you get to go to class, and people, you know, tell you how great you are, and maybe my experience is a little different since we won three national championships, but it was. I mean, all of my teammates, you know, Grant Wistrom and you know, all the guys that lined up wearing the red and white, we all say, you know, it was the time of our lives, and many of us have played in the NFL, But with Robert Griffin, I think it was the right decision. I think Art Briles kind of knew that it was time for him to go, and it will be interesting to see how he does. I am the first one to raise my hand. I think I said it on your show last year when talking about Cam Newton. I did not think that he would succeed as fast as he succeeded in the NFL.
That's right.
He went and had an amazing year for the Carolina Panthers, but I just thought for kids that rely on their athleticism more than, the knowledge of the game, I for one, just was someone who thought that those guys usually will struggle in the NFL because things are so complex, especially at the offensive, at the quarterback position. But Cam Newton proved me wrong. And hopefully Robert Griffin will too. I don't know if teams are looking at him saying, we want him to come in and we want him to take over. A lot of that depends on a lot of different things after a kid is drafted. But, you think about Cam Newton and the job that he did. I mean, you're talking about a year when guys were locked out. I mean, they couldn't get into the facilities. It was a shortened training camp and less time to learn the offense. And he went out and really did an amazing job. And I think Robert Griffin is in that mold. And I think nowadays, and you see it with Tebow, where coaches are not just saying, this is our model and we need guys to fit into our model. And if you don't fit into our model, then we don't want you. I think coaches are looking at players saying, he's an exceptional player. Let's get him in our organization, and we'll mold things somewhat around the things that they do best. And you're seeing that those teams sometimes have a lot of success.
Well, I'll be curious. Next week, we'll have to delve into the discussion about Landry Jones, because he is returning to Oklahoma, and a lot of folks wondering how he will do, in his senior year, and also, how he would do if he was to go to the next level. So we'll jump into that next week. And Jason, we certainly appreciate all your commentary this week. You did a great job.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just one moment.